Well, welcome to After Hours, the post-hockey game After Hours, the anti-Oscars. A lot of you people, very sort of encouraging that so many of you said, I never watch the Oscars. I can't wait for your show. I will try to fulfill your intellectual needs. January 26th, 2015, I had two gentlemen in here, Robert Owen Carr and Dirk Johnson, talking about their book, An American Story of Turbulence, Business Triumph, and Giving Back, titled Through the Fires. It was a book that stayed with me, the story of Robert's life and his triumph and his giving back. And on that show, they said, well, you know, we're working on another, as everybody who's on this show who's a writer says, we're working on another book. We'll be back. And I said, well, you have an open invitation, and here you are, gentlemen. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be back. Thanks.
The new book is titled Working Class to College, The Promise and Peril Facing Blue-Collar America. In this book, you write, and these two collaborated. Dirk is an old friend of mine from the old newspaper days and one of the most talented writer-reporters this town has ever seen. Robert's a relatively new friend, but it's a great, great collaboration. In the preface to the book, they write, in first person from Robert, my parents didn't want me to go to college. College, I was told, was for people who thought they were better than us. My father and mother saw higher education as a kind of snobby academic country club. Are things the same now? Are those sentences and feelings being repeated, Robert, to kids across this country, especially in rural and impoverished neighborhoods?
They absolutely are. I talk to these kids on a regular basis now, and there are families that just feel like, you know, there's no possible way their child can go on to a higher education, and they feel like if they did, they would go away from home and come back and feel like they were better than the rest of their family. And if your older brother or older sister didn't go to college, you know, why do you think you're better than we are? And a lot of kids do hear that. And by the fact that we're grabbing these kids at ninth grade now, we can really work hard to overcome that.
By we, this you mean the foundation that
yes.
you started.
Yes.
That you started based on it's an amazing story. It's called the Give Something Back Foundation. And you basically started this because you, as a senior at Lockport High School, with a, sorry to be so frank, a screwed-up dad and a loving, supportive mom were given $250 by the Lockport Women's Club. That is basically the seed of this foundation, yes?
It is absolutely the seed, but even more than that, when I did give back $5,000 to them many years later and said, this scholarship meant so much to me, I got a card back from the president of the Lockport Women's Club saying, Bob, you probably don't remember me, but I'm Mrs. Latour, and you were my daughter's crossing guard at Ludwig School. And she invited me to their annual meeting.
But were you not, Bob and Dirk, get in on this every time. I don't know how much money you've given to the Lockport Women's Fund. but were you not the first person to ever be given a scholarship who ever gave money back to them?
She told me in 53 years I was the first person to ever give anything back, which was stunning to me.
Yeah, me too.
And she invited me to their annual meeting, which turned out to be their 100th anniversary.
And at that meeting,
that's when we got
you really dove deep. You really
yes,
dove deep.
Yes, yes.
What did you want to do with this foundation? And we'll talk about how it's grown, too. What was the purpose of it? I mean, it was not merely the other thing that fascinates me about the way you two guys write and the way you tell a story is this is not the, well, I'm the greatest guy in the world, I'm an altruist kind of thing. You get a ton of self-satisfaction, a ton of joy from doing what you do.
Absolutely. I mean, we started, you know, we didn't start a foundation with that $100,000 that we gave to the Women's Club was conditioned that we were going to help five kids go through college.
Yeah.
And it was so rewarding to do that. That was really what happened, is that these five kids that we picked, I know them all to this day. They're just all great kids. It was like, oh, my God, these kids are tremendous, and we became part of their lives. They wouldn't let us not be, really. And so we did it again the next year and the next year. And after doing this for a few years and having 100% of our kids graduate from college, it was like, oh, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Bob's Foundation has an annual dinner. The last one, the first one was could have been held at a couple of tables. The last one, there were 899 people in the Foundation family. And the connection that these kids have with Bob is absolutely emotional to watch.
I can imagine.
These kids connect, knowing that he came from a background that is in many ways similar to theirs, that he still regards himself as a working class kid. And it really gives him a measure of credibility that is something to watch.
Were at any time any kids suspicious of motivations or anything? I mean, it's an incredible kind of gift to be given. You know, it's like, well, you know, at a normal Christmas party, you're sitting there and someone says, hey, go outside, you have a car. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, in the beginning, everybody's like, what's your motivation? What are you trying to do? Are you running for mayor? you know, these kinds of things. And over the years, we overcame that. But it took a while to overcome that. Like, what's in this for you? What's your real purpose in doing this? And the fact of the matter is, as you said, you know, I can't think of anything that I enjoy doing more than helping somebody, you know, get through college and live their dream. And we did a survey, Rick, here just a couple weeks ago. Every single one of our kids that went through college, that got into our program, it has a job today. Every single one of them. We have kids now that are 31, 32 years old.
Wow.
And our graduation rate from college in 4 years is 90%, which is unheard of.
That's astonishing.
Yeah, so we have a great program. We have a great team, and we just figured out how to do this right, and it's a very effective program.
But also in doing it, and when you were last on in January 2015 and you were talking about, well, we're working on another book, you started to see, I imagine, a kind of a dark side to the world of higher education. I found their new book, Working Class to College, The Promise and Peril Facing Blue-Collar America, at once really frightening, but also quite hopeful. But I do not think that most people understand what those perils are. You have in here, there's some scary statistics, if you don't mind my reading a little something from your book. Some 40 million Americans owe money for college loans, a sum now exceeding $1.3 trillion, more than automobile or credit card balances. The debt load has doubled in the last decade, as some 70% of graduates in the class of 2016 left the classroom with outstanding loans. Those loans, before we take a little break, and you can give me the answer to this now, those loans cripple people, do they not?
Many of them do. However, many of them are the way that students got through college. They need to be made in the right way, and that's the problem.
And they need to be made to the right people.
To the right people.
That's the other
for the
argument.
Right reason.
That's the other argument you make here. We'll be back with Dirk Johnson and Robert Owen Carr. I was just welcome back to After Hours. I was just complimenting Robert Owen Carr and Dirk Johnson about how they're very, very adept at using anecdotal stories to tell the larger tales. They tell stories about human beings in their new book, Working Class to College: The Promise and Peril Facing Blue Collar America. This is a real problem. And another sad statistic is 54% of students borrowing federal loans at public universities fail to graduate within 6 years, thereby compounding the debt. How does this affect lives, and how are you two going to change it? I hate to put that terrible responsibility on the two of you.
Well, we're changing it one kid at a time.
Yeah.
And we have over 1,000 seats that colleges purchased right now. So we're moving on and doing that. There's a number of different issues. Going to college, a bad message would be to say going to college isn't worth the money. It is worth the money if it's done properly. And I'd like to make a few points here because many people who are very knowledgeable about lots of things have read this book and said, you know, I had no idea.
Same here. And I'm not knowledgeable about college stuff, but there were revelations aplenty in this book for me.
Right. They're just like one of the if a person graduates from college, they're going to earn twice as much money as somebody that doesn't. That's pretty significant.
Yes.
It's $1 million. They're going to earn $1 million more. If they go into the STEM fields, they're going to make $3.5 million, three point five times as much as somebody that doesn't graduate from college. And if they don't go to college and they go to a community college or a trade school, there's 5 million jobs that pay good money that are unfilled in this country because there are no qualified students. So it's not if somebody isn't, you know, great at calculus, they can still go on and have a great career.
Yeah, and a good life.
And a great life. So going to college is something that everyone should do. 40% of the kids that get accepted at college today don't even start in September to go to college because they don't have the money to do it. So there's a big thing right there. And then we have these 40 million Americans that have gone to college partly but not graduated. And then you have these kids who owe $100,000 or $200,000 and they want to be social workers. Well, it's great to be a social worker, but when you make $40,000 or $50,000 as a social worker, you can't be taking on $200,000 of debt to get your degree.
Part of it is the aspiration of some of these young people, and indeed probably some of their parents.
Bingo. You just said the magic words. It's
totally out of whack with what is reasonable. That it's like, let's get a loan here. And there are a lot of places I know where you can get a loan, you know, a little bit from here and a little bit from there and a loan from here and a loan from there. Is that what it is?
That's partly it. And they get mom and dad to co-sign the loans. And mom and dad, who've worked their butts off to build a retirement fund, spend the retirement fund, sending their kid to some fancy university that is really not necessary whatsoever. There are great community colleges in this state.
No question.
Illinois has got all kinds of problems, but one of them is not that they have a poor community college system. It has a very fine community college system, but many people look down their nose at community college education. You can go for 2 years, and if you're a Pell Grant kid, which 40% of students are Pell Grant eligible, that pays for the tuition. Why aren't more people going to community college and avoiding 2 years of the cost of a college education and go on? They can transfer their credits to a 4-year school without losing a pace if they do it properly. It just does not make sense the way we're financing our college education right now.
Talk to me. There's a great chapter in the book called The Danger, and I think this is sort of what you're talking about too, Bob, The Danger of a Dream School. You talk about a girl named Allison in here. She had a dream school. What's the danger?
Well, the dream school is a bad idea for a number of reasons. One, you may not get into it. Two, it may not be the right school for you. We have a financial expert in the book who talks about kids who call in tears when they get not rejection letters, but acceptance letters because they've gotten into this dream school, and then they do the math in the financial aid form and they realize that it's far out of reach. One of the things that emerged in the research of this book is that there's a real class divide in this country when it comes to education.
And getting worse, I'm afraid, but
yes,
that's another matter.
If you're a top-performing student in the lower 25% of income, a top-performing student, you are less likely to get a college degree than if you're a relatively weaker student in the top 25%, for a lot of reasons that are not surprising.
Give me a few.
Well, there's more support. From the very start, you're likely to go to better schools. You have tutors. You have the money to do the kinds of things that enhance a college resume. Play in the band, play travel sports.
Sure.
Go on a mission trip to another country. And these things continue all the way through. And once students do go to college, people from affluent backgrounds have a cushion. They can make a mistake and live through it. In a financial crisis, the affluent can call home for help.
Right.
Working class kids tend to be one and done. They are one family sickness, one arrest, one failed class away from having to say goodbye to college.
Mm. Mm. It is an amazing book, ladies and gentlemen, and I think it's certainly an amazing, should be on your bookshelf if you have kids in high school. This will be not only, it's like a roadmap. It will tell you, you guys make such sense, too, that it's not just like, hey, everybody should go to college and I should go to whatever, you know, let's go visit 15 schools, which a lot of kids can't do. And let's pick the prettiest campus. I like the view of the Pacific Ocean from this campus, from Occidental or whatever it is. So maybe I'd like to go there. That's not how it works. We got to take a break. Then we got to get some news. I'm keeping these two guys, Robert Allen Carr, Owen Carr, and Dirk Johnson, all the way to 11 o'clock. Their previous book, and you can get this too, they're both from University of Illinois Press, where Bob went to school thanks to that $250 he got from the nice ladies in Lockport. Through the Fires is the first book. We'll be right back. Welcome back to After Hours on this Oscar night. Working Class to College, The Promise and Peril Facing Blue-Collar America is a book that any parent of any child of almost any age should be reading. It is, as written by Robert Owen Carr and my old friend Dirk Johnson, make the point that we don't live in an equal opportunity world, and kids are not getting a fair shake when it comes to colleges. We were talking off air about, you know, some of the elites, but every high school in the country would like to put up on their board, our students have gone to Harvard, Yale, Princeton, University of Illinois, all the great schools, because it's self-aggrandizing for them, isn't it, Dirk?
Well, and they do just that. There's a ritual at college admission times where students are invited to wear T-shirts to the schools that they've gained acceptance to. So you see some of the kids walking around in the name brand glamour schools, and meanwhile there are other kids that have decided to go to a community college because that fits, that works for them.
Yeah.
But the message that they're sent is that they are lesser than.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is just so cruel, really.
Yeah, it is cruel. It is cruel. And it's like, well, borrow more money and go to these other schools. And I'm sure that universities are money-making institutions. They're in the business of attracting students. And I suppose, you know, this whole fallacy of how hard it is that, you know, Harvard takes, you know, one out of every, you know, 50 people that applies there makes it seem more elite and better. I find it tragic, Robert. Am I making too much? Am I being too?
I think it's tragic that there isn't more knowledge embedded into the working class families. If they understood the value of a college education done properly without getting all this debt, they would know that their kids are going to really be very competitive in the job market. Employers like our kids because they have a lot of grit. They've been through tough times. They know what it's like to have to live in an economical way. And if they go to if they go to a community college and then go on to a 4-year school, if they're in STEM, the science, technology, engineering, and math, they're going to get paid just as much as the kids graduating from my alma mater, the University of Illinois.
Sure.
There's, why? Because these employers are looking for talented people who have the education. They don't care what school they went to.
I think that is such...
People don't know that.
That's such a great point. That is such a great point.
And then also, if you're going to get a job that isn't going to pay well, and there's all kinds of statistics out there, just look on the internet. You can't afford a Rolls Royce education if you're going to work in a minimum wage job.
Yeah,
it's just that simple. And let's use our brains. And people don't go buy cars that they can't afford, but they go buy educations that they can't afford. It's because of lack of knowledge.
Well, see, but the funny thing is, once people get out of school, do whatever they do, then they will go about the business of buying houses they can't afford, and they will do such things. Maybe it's because of the way they're taught about debt, and when they get out of school, they're carrying these big debts. So, well, I need a bigger car, and I have to have a bigger house, and it's this, sort of sad, self-fulfilling kind of debt prophecy. You got out of University of Illinois and made your fortune in...
Eventually,
it's
yes.
still a kind of a credit card business that I'll never understand, but that is why... How big? You started with a couple kids, right?
We started with 5 kids. We currently have 1,100 seats that have been purchased, and we're on our way to putting 3,000 kids, all Pell Grant eligible kids, which means the lower 40% of American in terms of family income. I'll tell you what, I'll put our kids up, and when they graduate from college, against the kids going to these elite schools.
Now, these kids initially came simply from the Lockport area, right?
Initially from Lockport High School back in the early 2000s.
Your alma mater.
Then we expanded to Will County. Then we expanded to a few other states in the east. Then we expanded to the entire state of Illinois, which we are now. And we're opening up in California now. So we're going to be in 6 states next year. And we'll be bringing in 300 and 400 kids a year. And can I talk about it, the results of the first program that our students are graduating from high school right now?
Yeah.
From this program? We picked 59 ninth graders 4 years ago to go to one of our partner schools in Illinois. And they're all graduating now and picking their schools. We require students to have a B average, and they have to take an academic curriculum. And these are all kids from Will County, Illinois, right now I'm talking about. We picked 59 kids thinking that 9 would not make a B average and,
sure.
and not be eligible
yeah.
at a 4-year college. Guess what? 57 of them are going to a 4-year college.
Wow.
We only bought 50 seats, but so we have to go buy 7 more seats. But
what does that mean to buy a seat?
We buy a seat at our university. For example, we just gave a $1 million check to my alma mater, the University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And we bought 50 seats at the University of Illinois for Pell Grant eligible kids who are full needs kids, meaning the poorest of the poor kids. And they're going to go to the University of Illinois, and they're going to graduate in 4 years, and they're going to conquer the world for their families.
So the school is obligated to take those.
The school's agreed to match part of our scholarship program and taking the state money, the federal money. Many of our children are foster kids. We really search for foster kids because they also have additional monies that are available from the state and the federal government.
Sure.
That almost pays for their full education, which means we can help more kids with our money.
Now, do these kids get out? Do they carry any debt when they're out, when
no
they graduate?
Debt. No debt for room, board, tuition, and fees.
Wow.
Now, they could borrow, and sometimes these kids come from families in tough circumstances.
Sure.
And they'll borrow money to help their mom and dad make the car payment or the rent payment. That's not what they should do, and we try to counsel them to not do that, but that does happen occasionally. So we don't guarantee no debt. We say no debt from tuition, fees, room, or board.
Well, that's
and of course,
astonishing.
That's the
you also make it fascinated with Chapter 10 in here, and I think this book could be called A Mentor. The chapter is titled Mentors Make the Difference. Expand on that for me, Dirk, will you?
Yes.
Because I think, any kid who is thinking of, any family who has a kid who's thinking of going to college, I think that whole family needs a mentor is what I think.
It is so important to have an adult who is checking in, paying attention, listening, making sure that a kid is checking the right boxes, and believing in the kid. If kids have someone who believes in them, they're more likely to believe in themselves.
Good point. Good point.
We do bring families in ninth grade in the fall. We call it an information night, and we counsel them to take the FAFSA equivalent exam that we have, which helps the family determine what kind of scholarships are available to them from the state and the federal government, and educate them about the cost of college education. We talk about these very topics in the book, and we do that in the various high schools that want to participate in our program. And so we do try to start educating these kids and their families in ninth grade, and we do that each and every year throughout the 4 years that they're in high school.
One of the things, the overriding sense that I get in your fascinating, provocative book, Working Class to College, The Promise and Peril Facing Blue-Collar America, which I think is, certain circumstances getting even a little more perilous these days, is that it's basically the story of smart kids and motivated kids and kids filled with potential. What they don't have is money.
Right.
They have everything but money.
They have in many cases in more abundance than kids who have had it relatively easy. Don't you think?
I do. And there is what's called the imposter syndrome that affects a lot of kids who grew up without much money. And that is to say that they don't think they belong at college. So that if a kid from an affluent family fails a test, they shrug and think, well, okay, next time.
Yeah.
If a kid from a working class family fails a test, they often see it as proof that they don't belong.
We got to take another commercial break. I hope you are as intrigued as I am by this topic, Working Class to College, The Promise and Peril Facing Blue-Collar America. If you order this book from the University of Illinois Press or any other of these places, you can buy books.
It goes on sale with Amazon on Wednesday.
This Wednesday, yes. Coming up. Well, why don't you order Through the Fires to prepare yourself? That's the first book by these two great writers that really tells the intense and intimate story and very, very, very honest story of Bob Carr's life. There's a chapter in this new book that does it, but if you want the full story, Through the Fires is the book. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I plan to have, all right, gentlemen, Robert Owen Carr and Dirk Johnson, is there another book are you working on now? Because this is your MO when you're on the show.
We are working on another book as we speak, and it's about children of incarcerated parents primarily.
Oh, that's an interesting
this is the
topic.
This is the cohort with the lowest college graduation rate in the country, and that's why we're there. We want to help the neediest kids because the college education to these kids breaks the cycle of poverty, and it breaks the cycle of imprisonment.
Yeah,
and it's something that our governments need to invest in more. We want to prove that how effective it can be to take these young kids and get them out of this environment and give them hope for
well,
a
out of this, you know, whirlpool of self-destruction. I think. How did you two, Bob Carr and Dirk Johnson, how did you meet and start this? What I think is my favorite collaboration.
It's my favorite one. I'll tell the story.
Sure.
My company has a summit. We call it a summit every year. We invite about 2,500 employees into the summit. It's a really big deal. We spend a lot of money on it.
I'm sure.
And we always try to find a really good speaker. And so we found this really great speaker from Sycamore, Illinois. His name is Michael McMillan. And Michael gave a great speech. And then he came back.
On what topic?
It was on the topic of having a positive attitude about the future and thinking on your own, thinking out of the box, that type of thing, called Paper Airplane, which is I won't tell the story. But Then we invited him to come back a couple years later, and he, the entire time in between, he and I corresponded back and forth, had some really great intellectual discussions about different things. And he kept saying, Bob, you need to write a book. Bob, you need to write a book. And my answer was, I thought it was funny, I don't know how it's going to end yet.
That's interesting. That's good. That's a good
and
answer.
He finally, you know, he finally convinced me to get started because he knew this guy that he went to high school with named Dirk Johnson.
Is that right?
And that's how we met Dirk. And it's been a great partnership.
It has been a great partnership. And I don't know if I brought it up during that first interview, but much to Dirk's credit and then to yours, that book is so honest about your dad and some of your dad's failings and some of the pain that your dad foisted on you and your siblings that it was almost like there was some psychoanalytical aspect to it. And I thought, you know, I've known Dirk for a very long time, and it's an odd dance you do in an interview. There's a lot of trust that has to be fostered and never abused. That's just a Dirk. You can say, yeah, thanks, Rick.
Yeah, true enough.
But you know what I mean, though. You do.
Is honest, brave, really.
Yeah,
to be able to talk about some of the experiences that he endured.
I don't think it's, to me, it's not bravery. It's about being, you know, being upfront, honest, because other people, you know, I grew up thinking this is the way life is, you know?
Right.
Parents are like this.
Well,
you
were
have
like,
to sort
until,
of live with
basically
it.
Until you got to college, until you got that seminal $250 from the Lockport Women's Club, that's how you thought people lived.
It is how I thought people lived, and I want other people to. There's a lot of people growing up today who are in a lot worse circumstances than I ever had. I see them every day, and I want them to know, hey, you can go through these problems and come out of them okay. And they want to hear that. They love hearing that, and it's true. I see these kids graduating from college. You know, 9 out of 10 kids graduating from college in 4 years, and they get great jobs, and they've broken that cycle. They know there's a different life out there because they've had all that great exposure to college.
But
so
also,
it's the most rewarding thing you can do, I think.
Well, one of the things I remember, too, about that, and you seem to have had a great, great caring mother, that you became resilient in the way that all kids who have to live through some unfortunate circumstances become resilient unless they become victims.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, you have ups and downs in life. And I always felt if I could live through growing up in the house I grew up in, nothing is going to be as tough as that was.
Yeah.
It's sort of always been my attitude. And I think there's something to that for a lot of our kids. If you can make it through what you went through, you know, life is going to be a lot easier going forward because you're going to know how to handle problems. You're not going to be defeated the first time a problem comes up in your life.
Dirk, just on the as a writer, this has got to be very rewarding. You don't run into guys like this all the time. You
no,
know what
you,
I mean?
You certainly don't. The arc of Bob's life, his mission, his success at changing so many lives, it's almost a Frank Capra film. And it's a delightful and gratifying thing, and I'm very grateful to be able to help chronicle Bob's work.
Well, and it must be some friendship by this point too, you know.
Absolutely.
You don't collaborate and not be either become friends or one of you does wind up in prison for shooting or strangling.
I'm a White Sox fan that he converted to become a Cubs fan.
Huh?
That's how close we are.
Oh my God! I'm a White Sox fan. Well, that's pretty good. It's not a bad time to be a Cubs fan, guys. I can't tell you. I was so taken a couple of years ago with Through the Fires, an American story of turbulence, business triumph, and giving back, that the whole giving back note to give the whole giving back and Robert's Foundation, which is sending kids to schools all across the country.
Six states so far.
Wow. See, this is great when you come back to talk about prisons. It'll be 50 states. I certainly hope. The latest book is Working Class to College, The Promise and Peril Facing Blue-Collar America. It is about some of the horrifying inequities that exist in our higher education system, where some kids don't just get shut out. They get shut out, and then they get lured in, and then they get shut out again. You know, to be lured in, which I think some are, and wind up after 4 or 6 years with huge debt and no diploma is heartbreaking to me. I cannot wait to see you guys again. Safe travels and all that jazz. We'll take a little commercial break, and then I'll say good night on this Oscar evening.